Welcome to Initial Reaction, the semi-regular podcast featuring myself, J.R. Radcliffe. I'm the sports director at Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, joined by J.P. Cadoran, media mogul, Time Warner Sports Channel 32, if you are a Time Warner Cable customer. J.P., welcome. We're hanging out in the Waukesha office, which is my domain this week, and it's our maiden voyage into the podcast world. We'll talk a lot of local sports, particularly in the preps landscape, and welcome. Welcome aboard.
I like this. I get to see an actual newsroom. I get to feel legit for once. It's nice.
You do not feel like your territory is actual newsroom territory
where
you produce.
No, those are little tiny cubicles and a little tiny edit bay. So This is nice.
This is an enclosed room without windows, so it's not like we're really a huge upgrade here, but...
It works.
We do get out occasionally.
No, this is fun.
Cool. So a couple topics that jump to mind here for our maiden voyage. That's one of my favorite expressions, by the way, maiden voyage.
That's allowed.
It is allowed. I wanted to talk about the multiplier a little bit, which has become a pretty big buzzword in prep sports. Over the last couple weeks, the multiplier referring to a measure that was discussed by the WIAA at their annual meeting, which would add, basically multiply all private school enrollment by 1.65 across the state. The intent being to arrive at a new enrollment number, obviously higher than the actual enrollment of individual schools. And when they go about placing those schools into postseason tournaments, they would have a higher number. They'd be bumped up to a higher division against some larger schools. Very, very controversial measure, as you can imagine. A lot of private schools in particular don't want to have to play up against bigger schools in the postseason, whether or not they'd be competitive with those schools. And, of course, public schools weighing in as well, smaller schools feeling like the playing field isn't level. The issue was tabled until next year. An ad hoc committee will come up with something by September, and then possibly for a real closer look in by December. So kind of an aggressive timeline. But when we first started talking about this, what were kind of your thoughts about it? I mean, the initial reaction for me, of course, is one like, that's a really bad idea. I've tried to think about it from a number of different angles. How do you sort of respond to the multiplier issue?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I haven't heard anybody in favor of it.
Right.
Anybody, except for the people that came up with it. And even then, they were still kind of quiet about it. So that was my initial reaction, if you will,
Good product placement there. Excellent work.
I don't know who really was driving this home and who supports it other than who came up with it. And then probably the first thing that I went to do was, since they came up with the 1.65 multiplier number, to go look at Illinois and why they picked Illinois' number and how it worked down there. And the first point was that they stopped using it in Illinois. Is that the 1.65 they had used to copy Illinois' model, and Illinois stopped using it because it wasn't working. So to me, that's the biggest indicator that, all right, this really isn't going to work. And I'm glad that at the WIAA meeting on Wednesday that they did table it. They didn't get it passed, because that's fine if people decide that the system is broken, but that was not the solution.
I didn't look a lot at what Illinois was doing. I know 1.65, that number was specifically because Illinois had used it. Why did they end up going away from it? Why wasn't it working? Is it just the whole model wasn't working, or that particular number was just seen as ridiculous?
Yeah, really nothing got accomplished. I mean, the same schools were winning. Nothing really changed that much. Not to mention, do we really want to copy anything Illinois does? I mean, there should just be a
they
certain...
They have the Bears.
There should just be a certain amount of pride of just never taking an Illinois idea. So that was interesting. But yeah, I mean, like I said before, I don't know anybody who's in favor of this. I'm definitely not one of them. I don't think that this is I don't really even acknowledge it's a problem that needs fixing. I think the problem is that Dominican is really good at basketball right now.
Yeah.
And that's really the only problem that people are trying to fix, because there aren't too many other complaints with any other schools.
Yeah, and my column I wrote a few weeks ago, I started with the question, if he had played for Marquette University High School, one of the bigger, if not the biggest, private school in the state of Wisconsin, and then be playing Division I, would this even be an issue? Because it seems like basketball is sort of driving the conversation a little bit, because it's easier for one or two kids to have a huge impact on a basketball program, and Dominican has won 3 straight state titles in Division IV, playing against schools from more rural parts of the state. If I try to play devil's advocate, and I've been trying to read up a lot about it, it does sound like some people signed the initial petition because they just really wanted to get a conversation started. Not that they necessarily believed this model was perfect, but that now we can at least look at the issue. We can talk about the right thing to do, which in that case is what was accomplished. They're going to look at this and try to solve the problem. And one point of view, I guess, is that, okay, if I'm from the southwest part of the state, say, which is kind of where this generated, I grew up in a community that has one workable gymnasium. I didn't have the access to the youth programs, the extensive youth programs and that the urban areas have. And I guess I could see, okay, well, that is difficult when you have to walk into a state tournament setting and face off with a team like Dominican, who comes from Milwaukee, where they have all these resources. Like, to the person that was speaking in the article I read, it was about resources. It wasn't necessarily about private or public. It's just we can't compete with what's going on in the urban
yeah,
parts.
See,
of the
state. To me, though, that already draws a red flag, because what resources do you need for basketball? You need a hoop. I mean, that's about it.
Yeah.
You also need a kid who's 6'10" as a freshman, but
preferably like, 250 pounds.
Yeah. So to me, that point is already busted, because you don't need resources. AAU and everything certainly helps, but those kids are traveling, whether they're from Brookfield or whether they're from Cuba City. You're traveling all over the country no matter what. I don't know necessarily how many practices AAU teams have. I mean, it's a very low number throughout the summer. So they're not, again, I just don't think they're at that much of a disadvantage. I don't know. I just don't think I don't think that's the solution.
I think another thing that jumps to mind is, as people who we live in Milwaukee, it seems so obvious to us that it's stupid because of open enrollment.
Yeah.
And you look at the public schools, the playing field is already level for public schools and private schools, at least in Division I, where, I mean, and let's look at the Division I state basketball tournament this past winter, where three of the four teams in Division I had major role players, or, I mean, major star players who were transfers into that program. In Germantown, in Nenna, and in Milwaukee King. So you look at it and you say, well, what's the point of trying to penalize private schools when public schools already have this edge? Now, I could see, though, if you're from those rural parts of the state, saying, well, that doesn't really help us or impact us, because, you know, we don't have all these different cities around us where kids might want to jump in using open enrollment to go to a program. We don't have that advantage that you might have in Milwaukee or in Madison or in the Green Bay area. So I guess it's difficult to keep a perspective, because we haven't been around. I mean, you know, I'm from the Fox Valley and live mm-hmm. in Milwaukee. I know you're from the Milwaukee area through and through. So maybe it's difficult to keep a perspective. I just can't escape the thought, though, that it's such a broad brush to put this on private schools. And I mean, even Dominican's a good example, where they have a great basketball program, but a football team that can't compete with the schools that they're matched up against,
let alone
bigger programs. So it would seem unfair to penalize the entire school just because they have one program that's really good. And maybe that gets to the heart of it, in that there needs to be a system that's sort of public or private, takes a look at programs that for whatever reason have had huge advantages and find a way to move those schools up, sort of a success multiplier, I guess, if you will. And that seems to be one of the things that could at least be on the table.
Yeah, kind of like a point system.
Right.
Somebody else had brought up the idea of, if you win a state championship, you move up a division.
Sure.
Simple as that. So Dominican, I don't know, would be up to Division I at this point, I think.
Why
after
not?
Winning three
they can
straight.
Compete with most Division I schools.
They can.
I mean, Germantown wiped the floor with them, but
they did that with a lot of teams.
Right.
I think it's interesting to look at somebody like Marquette. So Marquette High School has about 1,000 boys that go there. Then they get multiplied by two, so their enrollment counts as 2,000, even though they only have 1,000 students, which I think is completely fair. And then you would add this. And then you add this 0.65 multiplier on there. So then you would have Marquette High School with a student body of around 1,000 kids competing at a quote enrollment of about 3,200, which I think would just be pretty fantastic.
But of course, it doesn't matter in Division I. I mean, you can't
get
any higher, so who cares?
Yeah.
You can multiply it up to 10,000. You're still going up against the same schools.
Yeah, and then the other thing is just going back to what we had talked about earlier. I think that's just the trade-offs of rural versus city life. If you want to live in Cuba City, then I mean, a lot of people are very happy there. That's what they want. They choose to be away from cities, and they choose to be out in the country, which is fine, because I love getting out in the country myself. But you don't get to complain then about how you don't have schools to choose from, or you don't have anything else or AAU teams to go play on when that's what you made your choice as.
I've tried not to look at it quite that way. Like, I mean, a lot of people don't choose where they live or where they grow up, and then they, you know, family and where they set down roots and whatnot.
Well, I did choose to look at it that way.
Oh, yes. You went to school in the cornfields of Iowa, after all. So
absolutely.
You went to a pseudo-rural part of the country, I suppose. I do see some of the arguments. I like the idea that this has maybe started a conversation more than actually put this, more than having this plan get jammed through on kind of a short notice window. I'm glad that reaction wasn't the case, because I think it would have been fairly damaging to the system that the WIAA has now. And I know one of the arguments thrown out is they went to a fifth division in basketball. That controversial move, primarily to open up another door for a team that, you know, doesn't have to face now a Dominican, mm-hmm. or Racine St. Cats or La Crosse Aquinas. And then here, this is already being shown 3-4 years later that it's maybe not fulfilling that part of it because people are still upset about the disparity a little bit.
And we get four divisions of girls soccer now,
That's right, and boys soccer when that comes around.
It'll be a nice, fun day on June 21st.
Yes. Yeah, there'll be a lot of soccer.
Yeah.
So switching gears a little bit, the multiplier issue, we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, down the road. Switching gears to the Milwaukee Brewers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, April 20th, Easter, Carlos Gomez got into a little bit of a scrum with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Garrett Cole, phenom pitcher. Yeah, it was a brawl. It was good.
According to baseball terms, it was a brawl. It was a melee. It was a lot of things.
A fracas.
All for about two punches that were thrown.
Yeah,
but it's called a brawl.
When was the last time though you actually saw punches thrown? There's so much posturing in Major League Baseball. The bullpen's empty. And everybody just looks at each other.
This was legit.
I mean, Travis Snyder of the Pirates had a shiner after all that.
From one punch. That's
it. One punch.
I mean, there was that one punch that was thrown and maybe like two or three others, right. And that was it.
Obviously, it was a little bit more bark than bite, but the bottom line is a couple Brewers got suspended, a couple Pirates got suspended. Gomez picked up 3 games, Martin Maldonado 5 games, and the issue at hand is whether or not Carlos Gomez maybe showboated a little bit too much when he hit a triple, which looked like it might be a home run off the bat, and stopped and stared at it for a little bit, rolled around to third base, and the pitcher, Garrett Cole, started yelling at him, and kind of escalated from there. I guess I would be interested, just for starters, before we get to sort of the take on how that impacts prep sports and youth sports. What were you thinking there? I mean, I have some pretty strong thoughts about it, but what? Yeah. I mean, who's to blame? Was anyone to blame? I mean, how would you interpret that situation?
So you're a baseball guy.
I am a baseball
guy. I am not.
Oh,
I was a. I mean, I still enjoy watching it, but your history is baseball.
Baseball.
Mine. I mean, I'm a hockey guy. I love watching football. So, to me, the whole unwritten rules, the whole bench clearing brawls thing are just complete jokes to me. Just complete jokes. That's why I was saying, when you call this a brawl or a melee, and then you take one look at a hockey fight.
It's true.
I mean, it's just, it's not even apples and oranges. It's just ridiculous to me. So, to me, the whole thing is completely overblown, and it's just utterly ridiculous to me. The fact that I don't even know where to start because it's just so frustrating to me. Like, a lot of people say, I mean, you can retrace the blame a couple steps on this. You can say, well, if Snyder doesn't come off the bench, then there isn't a fight. Then you can say, well, if Cole doesn't bark at Gomez, then there isn't a fight. Then you can obviously say, if Gomez doesn't showboat, then there isn't a fight. For me, who cares what Gomez did at the plate? If I'm Cole, I sit there while Gomez is at third base just laughing because he just gave up a run.
Yeah.
We all know he could have easily been at home plate with the way that he normally runs. He could have easily been at home plate by the time that he slid in the third. But because he, quote, showboated, which let's diagnose that real quick as him just stopping and pausing for a second. But if we want to call that showboating, fine. So because he showboated, he lands at third instead of home plate. If I'm Garrett Cole, I'm just laughing.
Right.
So this whole thing is just so ridiculous to me.
One of the things I love about baseball, excuse me.
Get yourself together.
Yeah.
Jeez.
One of the things I love about baseball are the moments where you get that celebration, a walk-off hit, a walk-off home run, whatever. You know, you get to see everybody act like a little kid. I think it's great. And if a pitcher wants to show emotion, if a batter wants to show emotion, I love that. And for whatever reason, and we've seen this in the NFL a little bit too, where certain celebrations have gotten weeded out, viewed as taunting. But baseball doesn't even need those edicts from on high. They already have this unwritten rule thing going on where
they already have Brian McCann to police everybody.
Yeah, to police everything, the captain of the unwritten rule team. It really is, I think, disappointing because baseball is a fun game to watch, and it's a long season, and so you know you're asking these guys to coop themselves up, and obviously they're well compensated for it. But
why are we cracking down on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And pitchers, I think, do have a little bit of an advantage in terms of, I mean, you see Jose Fernandez for the Marlins. He gets dinged a little bit for celebrating. But for the most part, closers close the game. They have their little ritual. You've got Fernando Rodney firing arrows into the air like Usain Bolt. You've got Brian Wilson has a pretty demonstrative routine after he closes a game. You don't really hear about that being a problem. But a guy pauses for a split second coming out of the box to admire a home run, and every team does this. Every team has a guy or two.
The Pirates did it.
There was a video put together of like four instances mm-hmm. where Pirates were admiring home runs that didn't end up being home runs, and then they're the ones sort of, you know, adjudicating this violation of the unwritten rules.
So that's why I think this whole thing is ridiculous, because yeah. every team does it. It's not. There's no one way to go about it. Every single team will showboat or do whatever, and then it's up to each player to decide when it's too offensive or something like that.
Right.
It's just complete garbage. And now it's a story for how many days now when it should have been dropped a long yeah. time ago. I can't stand it. I can't.
Yep. I want to see guys celebrate. I want to see pitchers celebrate.
Absolutely.
I want to see hitters celebrate.
And that's the way Gomez said in his interview at Miller Park. I mean, that's the way that he grew up playing. I mean, that's his Latin flair of the game.
Sure.
And so now he just needs to come to America and have that just completely taken away. He's not buying it. Neither am I.
I wrote about it a little bit in my Preps Alcove column this week, which you can find on livinglakecountry.com, and talked to a couple of local baseball coaches, tried to see kind of their take on it, because there is a little bit of a trickle down when guys at the high school or the youth level see players getting into fights on the field or admiring a home run ball, and kind of what they thought about it. And it does seem like the lower level coaches, they do feel a responsibility to teach the game, quote unquote, how it should be played, and sort of, you know, teach them to respect the game. But at the same time, they're supposed to enjoy it, and they're supposed to have a great time doing well, and they're supposed to be angry when they're not doing well. And so even though there is some of that sentiment, I also think that it's impossible to weed out the feelings, the sort of spontaneous feelings you have when you do well in the game of baseball.
There's plenty of ways to respect the game, and I think celebrating a good play is still one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's no way that we can afford to take that out of the game. A game like baseball in itself is based upon failure. I mean, players get a hit 3 times out of 10, and they're considered all-stars. So if we're going to take away celebrating for those 1, 2, or 3 times a game where they actually do get a hit,
right.
I think that's ridiculous.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree. So
well, tell your baseball people
I will.
To agree with me then.
I will. I think most people do. I mean, I've been trying to look at this sort of from the alternative point of view, because I'm a Brewers fan. I like Carlos Gomez, and there's a lot of national heat on Carlos Gomez right now that he's a little bit too much of a hothead. And I guess I feel like having talked to him and having seen him play, I just don't think that's true. I just think he's like a youthful kid who loves to play baseball, and I think that's just what you're seeing. I really think he comes by that honestly. And a lot of the old guard, so to speak, mm-hmm. they really have a problem with this, and that just boggles my mind a little bit. So I'm trying to look at it from the Pirates' point of view, from the alternative point of view, and I do think he made some mistakes. I think he could have taken the high road, but at the same time, I mean, man, I love watching him play. I think he's just what's good about baseball, not just because he's on my team, because he's just fun.
He cost his team a run. That's the only thing the Pirates need to worry about. And after that, everything else, just sit down, shut up, and keep playing.
Right, absolutely. So getting closer to the end of our first initial reaction, wanted to touch real quickly on the Badger football team. You saw the spring game.
Yes, sir.
You guys went out there and talked to some folks. A lot of players on the Wisconsin team from the area, from the Milwaukee area, but obviously from the state of Wisconsin in general. And I know some of the Brookfield guys on the team, Alec James Brookfield, he's former newspaper's All Suburban Player of the Year, comes to mind as a guy who might take a big step forward this coming season. I don't know about him, but in general, anybody that you saw or heard from or talked to that really led you to believe there'd be local guys that are really going to...
Well, I'm a big Derek Landish fan, and that's not because I went to Arrowhead, because I was older than him, much older than him. I don't know him.
But full disclosure, you did go to Arrowhead.
That's fine.
So did Derek Landish.
That's fine. But I really believe, I mean, I remember watching him on special teams as a freshman and watching the way that he just flew down the field, and he consistently made tackles on kickoffs and punts. And I was really impressed by that just because he wasn't a guy that got a lot of headlines when he was playing at Arrowhead. He was a good player, sure, an all-conference player, but I mean, he wasn't one of those celebrities, but I guess I'll settle for that. But he wasn't one of those guys like Alec James, where everybody in the state knew about him. So I like watching him, and I think that now there's certainly enough opportunities out there on the defense with 8 or 9 seniors graduating, where a lot of guys are going to have to step up. And he's one of the only returning guys in that entire front seven. So I really think Landish can play. And then, like you said, the Brookfield guys, Alec James and Chikwe Obashi, there's tons of opportunities. There's tons of reps available. And by all accounts, those two guys did a really good job. Chikwe, a lot of guys said really good things about him last year when he was on scout team and redshirting. And it sounds like he's kind of ready to take that next step as well.
Joel Stave, a Whitnall High School product from the Milwaukee area. I don't know if there's ever been a more controversial Wisconsin Badger. He's been too hurt to participate in some of the spring stuff. But kind of the big question right now, who's going to play quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers? So, J.P. Cadoran, who's going to play quarterback for the Wisconsin Badgers?
Before I answer, my question to you and everybody is, why are there all these expectations for Stave? Stave was even less regarded than Landish when he went in.
He's a walk-on, he is. Am I right?
So I don't know why anybody's expecting him to be the answer at quarterback, but yet it keeps going on. My money would be on Tanner McAvoy.
Really?
I really, really like the way that he's come along. He's a completely different player than he was in the fall. Gary Anderson was just raving about him, the way that he is now a leader on this team, and before he wasn't, his confidence in the huddle. And I think his element with his footwork, I mean, I understand I'm really not reinventing the wheel by saying all these things, but the way that he can run and extend the play, he's really good. His arm isn't perfect, but I think he's heads and tails better than Bart Houston. I think he's better than what Joel Stave can do for you. In my mind, I think we've reached the ceiling of Joel Stave. I think we've seen as good as he's going to get and what he can do for your team. So I would be thrilled with McAvoy personally.
Be really, I mean, the burden to have to lose a guy who played safety for them last year.
I know, and he was good. Well. He was good.
That'd be a remarkable thing for him to jump over to the other side of the ball. Real quickly, I wanted to relay a story. We were celebrating Chuck Delsman Week.
Chuck Delsman Day.
On Tuesday. He's an Arrowhead guy as well. 45 years with Lake Country Publications. He told me a really funny story about J.J. Watt. Some of you may have heard of J.J. Watt. Apparently, he's a freshman. I didn't know this. J.J. Watt played quarterback, at least tried to play quarterback for Pewaukee, either at the lower levels or the varsity. I wasn't very clear about that, but definitely Chuck said he was so bad at quarterback, he couldn't have even imagined a worse quarterback. And we were talking about the great athletes of Lake Country. We were just in a conversation, and he said that if it had gone down that road, that guy would have done nothing in high school or anywhere beyond that. But obviously they decided to move him to the offensive side of the ball as a tight end, and then switched to DN by the time he got to college at Wisconsin, and the rest is history.
How many positions did the Watt kids play at Pewaukee?
Oh, all of them, of course.
Right? I mean, when you think of everything that Derek and TJ did, too.
Yeah, and Derek was a little smaller, so he was a running back. He's really the only true running back of the lot.
And linebacker.
And linebacker now. And I think, well, now he's a fullback at Wisconsin, but went to college as a linebacker. Yeah. I don't know if any of them ever got in the secondary, but I feel like TJ Watt would have been good enough to do that. He was playing on the line of scrimmage for the most part.
And played quarterback.
Oh,
I feel like
tight end.
Did TJ kick?
He did.
Punt?
No, he did, definitely. Yep. And I think Derek might have too, although I'm drawing a blank.
Right. We're seriously at like 10 different positions that those kids have played.
They're slightly talented.
Then you add in their hockey careers, which I would have loved to have seen. Because JJ is like, I want to say he's maybe 2 years younger than I am.
Okay.
So I wondered if I ever like met up with him and played him
maybe.
When I was a kid.
Maybe.
Because I would have loved to have seen him on skates.
Yes,
he skated the other day over at the Mullet Center.
Oh, really?
He did.
That would have been a good photo opportunity.
They had photos or video. I don't know who did. I think it was just like maybe his personal Instagram or something like
that. Gotcha.
He still got it.
Well, you are a hockey guy, unfortunately. Tuukka Rask, probably a different around you right
don't
now.
Don't say that name.
As we tape this on Wednesday, the Bruins taking the 2-1 series lead on his beloved Detroit Red Wings. So, real quickly, want to let you know, Lake Country Publications Thursday, the Lake Country Reporter, we got a story on Jake Soufflone, Arrowhead wrestler, now at Nebraska, heading into his senior year. And anything we can expect on Sports Weekly coming up in the next week or two, Jake?
Nothing. We're
Nothing.
Shutting it down.
It's over.
No. What do we got this week? Right now, there's some Bucks stuff, a lot of Bucks stuff, just because there's so many different angles to the Bucks news. There's new owners, there's old owners, there's new players, there's old players, there's a draft coming up,
there's an arena.
Oh, yeah, there's an arena issue. There's a head coach that doesn't know if he's going to be back next year. There's a general manager who's been waiting a decade to land the top pick and to have his team tank, and now that he finally has the top pick, or at least he could have the top pick, he might not be around to pick it. So there's so much stuff going on with the Bucks. The Admirals made the playoffs for the 12th straight year, so I talked a little bit about that. And then The Appleton North girls soccer team in a heated Fox Valley Association conference race this year.
Going a little north.
That's part of the job duty.
Absolutely. All right, for JP Kadoran, thanks for joining us, JP. J.R. Radcliffe, again, JP's with Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. I'm from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers. Thank you for listening to Initial Reaction.